Today on WikiNews, the United States Senate passes the contentious financial overhaul bill, same-sex marriage is legalized in Argentina, India approves a new symbol for its currency, Harry Potter is back in court, and in history, the key to deciphering an ancient language is dug up in the port city of Rashid. Today is Thursday, July 15th, 2010. I'm Dan Harlow, and this is WikiNews. Today, the United States Senate approved the financial overhaul package in a 60-39 vote. The bill is now awaiting President Barack Obama's signature. This bill is the second major domestic policy victory for Obama after his revamp of the health care system earlier this year. Obama is expected to sign the legislation into law next week, and the focus now switches to how the new regulations will be implemented in the coming weeks and months. The legislation will give financial regulators significant discretion in shaping the rules. The legislation also puts faith in regulators to spot developing problems in the financial system and gives them the authority to act to attempt to prevent another financial crisis. The bill calls for banks to hold more money in their reserves to prepare for bad economic situations, but the details of how this will be done are also up to the regulators. In the wake of a special caucus vote that removed former Prime Minister of Australia Kevin Rudd and instated Julia Gillard as the new Prime Minister, claims have arisen regarding a deal made between the two in the Prime Minister's official residency that allegedly occurred the night before the special caucus vote and Gillard's apparent breaking of the agreement. During the question portion of Gillard's recent address to the National Press Club, veteran journalist Laurie Oakes asked if a deal had been made between Rudd and Gillard during the negotiations in the Prime Minister's suite prior to the announcement of the leadership spill. Claims were further made that Rudd then contacted his supporters to inform them of what he thought was a deal while Gillard did the same. However, in that time, Gillard learned that she had the numbers in the caucus to challenge Rudd and proceeded to tell him that she would indeed be challenging his position. Gillard refused to answer to the claims, stating out of respect she would not speak publicly about the events of that night. Quote, "It is not my intention to canvass any of the matters that were discussed in that room. I intend to respect that confidence for the rest of my life." If the claims were to be true, the only other notable time where an event such as this occurred was in 1989, where former Prime Minister Bob Hawke promised to stand down for former Prime Minister Paul Keating for the 1990 election. This never happened, and a similar caucus vote took place. A spokesperson for Kevin Rudd said he had no comment to make regarding these claims. Earlier today, Argentina's Senate approved legislation that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, making it the first country in Latin America and the 10th country in the world to do so. The law, which also allows same-sex couples to adopt, was voted at 4 a.m. local time after 14 hours of debate, and it passed with 33 votes in favor to 27 opposed with 3 abstentions. Since the lower house of Argentina's government has already passed the bill and President Cristina Fernandez is in favor of the bill, it is expected to enter into law in only a few days once it is published in Argentina's official bulletin. The legislation, backed by President Fernandez's government, was a subject of a campaign by the Roman Catholic Church and other religious groups which held rallies against it, including a march on Argentina's Congress, and encouraged citizens to protest the bill. Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, as part of his opposition to the bill, said that, quote, "Children need to have the right to be raised and educated by a father and a mother." Members of the Senate were divided in their views of the bill. One senator, Juan Perez Alsina, said that, quote, "Marriage between a man and a woman has existed for centuries and is essential for the perpetuation of the species." Speaking in favor of the bill, another senator, Daniel Filmus, said that, quote, "Society has grown up. We aren't the same as we were before." Elsewhere in Latin America, same-sex civil unions have been legalized in Uruguay and in parts of Mexico and Brazil. Mexico City legalized same-sex marriage in 2009. Social networking site Facebook was yesterday refusing to remove pages set up in tribute to British killer Raoul Moat, despite pressure from the highest levels of the UK government. A Downing Street official had earlier said that a complaint would likely be lodged with Facebook following questions to Prime Minister David Cameron in Parliament. Raoul Moat killed one person and seriously wounded two others in Northumbria following his release from prison, prompting a major week-long manhunt. A standoff with police ended early on Saturday morning with Moat shooting himself. An investigation by the Independent Police Complaints Commission is ongoing. 13 people have now been arrested, with several under suspicion for assisting Moat in evading the police. Flowers have been left on the riverbank where Moat shot himself and outside his home in Newcastle. A tribute page on Facebook titled R.I.P. Raoul Moat, You Legend has attracted over 30,000 members. During the weekly Prime Minister's question session, Conservative MP Chris Heaton-Harris asked David Cameron to contact Facebook about removing the page, which he described as containing, quote, a whole host of anti-police statements. The Prime Minister described Moat as a callous murderer and condemned the expressions of sympathy for him. Quote, I cannot understand any wave, however small, of public sympathy for this man, stated Cameron. There should be sympathy for his victims and the havoc he wreaked in that community. There should be no sympathy for him. A spokesman for the Prime Minister later said that Facebook would be contacted over the matter. In response, Facebook issued a statement saying that the page did not breach its terms of service and would not be removed. Quote, Facebook is a place where people can express their views and discuss things in an open way, as they can do in many other places, and as such, we sometimes find people discussing topics others may find distasteful. However, that is not a reason in itself to stop a debate from happening. An animal rights protester who left homemade petrol bombs at buildings of the University of Oxford has been jailed for 10 years. Mel Broughton, a prominent member of the campaign group Speak, has denied the charges of conspiracy to commit arson and possession of an article with intent to destroy property, but the jury at Oxford Crown Court found him guilty by unanimous verdict after deliberating for over 5 hours. Broughton made his devices using water bottles and sparklers. He put one on the roof of a cricket pavilion belonging to the Queen's College in November 2006, and two under a portable cabin at Templeton College in February 2007. The device at the cricket pavilion, which contained 12 liters of petrol, went off and caused about 14,000 pounds of damage. The Templeton College petrol bombs, together containing 9 liters of petrol, did not ignite, and DNA on one of them linked Broughton to the attacks. He was protesting about the university's decision to back the construction of an animal research laboratory, and a police search of his home found more sparklers, as well as documents about the university and its staff. This was the second time that Broughton had been convicted of the offenses. His conviction in February 2009 was overturned by the Court of Appeal, and a retrial was ordered. This began on June 16th and ended on Tuesday with Broughton's conviction. Judge Patrick Eccles, QC, imposed a 10-year prison sentence, which will be reduced by 2.5 years for the time that Broughton has already served in custody. When sentencing Broughton after the first trial, Judge Eccles said that these events, quote, were part of a ruthless conspiracy to instill fear in all those connected to the laboratory. An officer from Thames Valley Police, Detective Superintendent Mark Jones, said that Broughton, quote, was someone who believed direct action in the form of planting explosives and setting fires is acceptable. He added that the conviction was the right result. A university spokesperson said that, quote, it accepted the rights of protesters to voice their objections within the law, but would work to protect staff and students from criminal activity of any kind. A symbol for the Indian rupee was announced by the government of India today. The Indian currency had previously lacked a distinctive symbol like those associated with the U.S. dollar, euro, pound sterling, and the yen. Minister for Information and Broadcasting of India, Ambika Soni, announced the symbol chosen for the currency. Quote, the symbol for the rupee would lend a distinctive character and identity to the currency and further highlight the strength and robustness of the Indian economy as a favored destination for global investments. A competition was held to select the symbol, which drew more than 3,000 entries. After evaluation by the head of the Reserve Bank of India, 5 entries were shortlisted. The winning design came from a postgraduate student, D. Udaya Kumar, who won $5,000. The government announced that the symbol will not be printed on currency or notes, but would be added to the Unicode standard and other scripts used in the world. Sony said the symbol would be adopted in India by the next two quarters and globally within a year and a half or 2 years. She mentioned that it would soon feature in worldwide keyboards for easy use. To have a look at the new symbol, please visit wikinews.org and possibly even donate a few symbols of your own by clicking on our donate link. We'll gladly take one of these. In what the RSPCA calls a horrific case of animal cruelty, a dog's jaw was taped shut and its throat cut in Cairns, Australia. The Staffordshire mix, who was found by police in a critical condition last Thursday, was reportedly struggling to breathe and bleeding heavily due to her throat being slashed and her muzzle bound. Quote, "The way they were cut was almost down to the larynx, so muscles were cut, but luckily they missed the jugular veins," said Sarah Gill, the vet who stitched the 10-centimeter-long, 3-centimeter-deep cut. In a statement reported on Tuesday, Inspector Cameron Boswell, a law enforcement officer with the RSPCA Animal Welfare Charity, said it is hard to comprehend that there are people in the community capable of this level of cruelty. Quote, "This would have been up there as one of the most horrific cases we've dealt with. The poor dog must have been petrified. How she didn't die is miraculous," he said. Named Frankie by rescuers, the dog is progressing well along her road to recovery, has a warm, loving, and kind nature, and has begun to come out of her shell, Boswell said. The incident has become part of a string of violent attacks on pets in Queensland. Another dog in North Queensland named Boof was beaten and left to die with a 30-kilogram chain around his neck in January. In May, a family dog in Toowoomba had its throat slit and a rubber band placed around the wound, twice. The RSPCA is appealing for information from the public regarding the person or persons responsible for the latest attack. Finally, in entertainment news, a trustee of the estate of the late author Adrian Jacobs filed a lawsuit against the U.S. publisher of the Harry Potter series, Scholastic Inc., on Tuesday. He claimed that J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, had copied scenes from Jacobs' novel, The Adventures of Willy the Wizard, to the fourth novel in her series, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. The suit followed a similar case last year, in which the trustee sued the UK publisher of the series, Bloomsbury Publishing Place. Both of these cases are currently pending. The complaint states that the protagonists in both books are, quote, "required to deduce the exact nature of the central task in a competition," and had done so in a bathroom. Both books also involved rescuing hostages imprisoned by a community of half-human, half-animal creatures. The suit also claimed that Christopher Little, a literary agent of Rowling, was originally the literary agent of Jacobs. The claim was denied by Scholastic. Scholastic called the claim, quote, "completely without merit." They pointed out that Rowling had said in February that she'd never even read Jacobs' books. The trustee said that the U.S. was the world's largest foreign market, so they brought their first overseas action there. He demanded that all copies of the Harry Potter novel be destroyed and all the profit made by the book given to him. No word if either of the court cases will require the use of the magic mind-reading spell Legilimens. And on this day in history, in the year 1798, Napoleon Bonaparte had begun his ill-fated campaign in Egypt and Syria to protect French trade interests and undermine Britain's access to India. Accompanying the expeditionary army was a corps of 167 technical experts known as the Commission of the Sciences and Art, and was comprised of mathematicians, astronomers, artists, architects, and other scientists. A year into the campaign, as French soldiers under the command of Colonel D'Harpoul were strengthening the defenses at Fort Julian, located a couple of miles northeast of the Egyptian port city of Rashid, also known as Rosetta, Lieutenant Pierre-François Bouchard spotted a slab with inscriptions on one side. Immediately recognizing that this slab was unique, the find was announced to Napoleon's newly founded scientific association in Cairo, the Institute of Egypt. In a report by Commission member Michel Ange Lincray, he noted that it contained three inscriptions, including Greek and ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs, and rightly suggested that the three inscriptions could be versions of the same text. The slab Bouchard found was made of black granite measuring 45 inches high, 28 and a half inches wide, and 11 inches thick. It weighed 1,700 pounds and was classified as a Ptolemaic era stele, objects which are tall, slender stone monuments, often with writing carved onto its surface. It was thus named the Rosetta Stone after the town it was discovered in, and it quickly became one of the most famous archaeological and important linguistic finds in modern history. The Rosetta Stone, as we now know it, exists in a damaged state, as it is actually a fragment of a larger stele, and all three texts are incomplete. The Greek text contains 54 lines, of which the first 27 survive in full. The rest are increasingly fragmentary due to a diagonal break at the bottom right of the stone. The Demotic text, which is a form of evolved Egyptian writing, has survived the best. It has 32 lines, of which the first 14 are slightly damaged on the right side. The hieroglyphic inscription has suffered the most damage. Only the last 14 lines of the hieroglyphic text can be seen. All of them are broken on the right side, and 12 of them on the left. The text recorded on the stone is an inscription recording a decree, known as the Memphis Decree, that was issued roughly around March 27, 196 BCE, by a congress of Egyptian priests in honor of 13-year-old King Ptolemy V in establishing the worship of the new ruler as a god. The decree records that Ptolemy V gave a gift of silver and grain to the temples, adding that in the 8th year of his reign, during a particularly high Nile flood, he had the excess waters dammed for the benefit of the farmers. In return, the priesthood pledged to celebrate the king's birthday and coronation days annually, and that all of the priests of the land are to serve him along with the other gods. A portion of the stone reads, quote, "And his priesthood shall be entered upon all formal documents, and private individuals shall also be allowed to keep the feast, and set up the aforementioned shrine, and have it in their houses, performing the customary honors at the feasts, both monthly and yearly, in order that it may be known to all that the men of Egypt magnify and honor the god Epiphanes Eucrestios the king, according to the law." Using the Rosetta Stone to decipher Egyptian glyphs was, in hindsight, a relatively straightforward affair. At the time of the stone's discovery, Egyptian hieroglyphs were undeciphered, and there had been no understanding of the ancient Egyptian language since shortly before the fall of the Roman Empire. By the 4th century AD, few Egyptians were capable of reading hieroglyphs, and the myth of allegorical hieroglyphs was ascendant. Monumental use of hieroglyphs ceased after the closing of all non-Christian temples in 391 AD by the Roman Emperor Theodosius I, and the last known inscription is from Philae, known as the Graffito of Esmet Akum, from 396 AD. Efforts to translate the glyphs date back as far as the 5th century, when Horopollo wrote the Hieroglyphica, a spurious explanation of almost 200 glyphs. Considered authoritative, yet largely false, the work was a lasting impediment to the decipherment of Egyptian writing. Later attempts at deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphs were made by Arab historians in medieval Egypt during the 9th and 10th centuries. Dhul Nun al-Misiri and Ibn Wishaywa were the first historians to be able to at least partly decipher what was written in the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs by relating them to contemporary Coptic language used by Coptic priests in their time. The study of hieroglyphs continued centuries later, when various modern scholars attempted to decipher the glyphs, notably Johannes Caporius Baccanus in the 16th century, Athanasius Kircher in the 17th, and Silvestri di Sassi, Johann David Åkerblad, and Thomas Young in the early 19th century, each of them making important steps toward the solution, but failing to find it. It wasn't until the discovery of the Rosetta Stone on July 15, 1799, that the critical missing information would eventually allow the French scholar Jean-François Champollion to discover the nature of the script. While ancient Greek was widely known to scholars, the details of its use in the Hellenistic period as a government language in Ptolemaic Egypt were not so familiar. Large-scale discoveries of Greek papyri were still a long way in the future. Thus, the earliest translations of the Greek text of the stone show the translators still struggling with the historical context and with administrative and religious jargon. It was Hubert Pascal Amelion who produced in 1803 the first published translations of the Greek text in both Latin and French to ensure that they would circulate widely. This work was then further refined by Christian Gottlob Heine, and at Cambridge, Richard Porson worked on the missing lower right corner of the Greek text. At the moment of the stone's discovery in Egypt, the Swedish diplomat and scholar Johan David Åkerblad was working on a little-known script of which some examples had recently been found in Egypt, the script known today as Demotic. He called it cursive Coptic because, although it had few similarities with the later Coptic script, he was convinced that it was used to record some form of the Coptic language, the direct descendant of ancient Egyptian. When the French Orientalist Sylvestre de Sacy received a lithograph of the Rosetta Stone, he realized that the middle text was in the same Demotic script. So, together with Åkerblad, they set to work on the middle text of the stone, assuming that the script was alphabetic. They attempted, by comparison with the Greek, to identify with this unknown text the points where Greek names ought to occur. Then, in 1802, de Sacy reported that he had successfully identified five names: Alexandros, Alexandria, Ptolemos, Arsinoe, and Ptolemy's title, Epiphanes. However, de Sacy and Åkerblad could not identify the remaining characters in the Demotic text, which, as is now known, included ideographic and other symbols alongside the phonetic ones. Though de Sacy eventually gave up work on the stone, he was able to make one other contribution. In 1811, prompted by discussion with a Chinese student about Chinese script, de Sacy recalled a suggestion made by Georg Zoga in 1797 that in Egyptian hieroglyphic inscriptions, foreign names might be written phonetically. He also recalled that as long ago as 1761, Jean-Jacques Barthélemy had suggested that the characters enclosed in cartouches in Egyptian hieroglyphic inscriptions were proper names. Thus, when Thomas Young, Foreign Secretary of the Royal Society of London, wrote to him about the stone in 1814, de Sacy suggested in reply that in attempting to read the hieroglyphic text, Young might look for cartouches that ought to contain Greek names and try to identify phonetic characters in them. Young did so, with two results that together paved the way for the final decipherment. He discovered in the hieroglyphic text the phonetic characters P, T, O, L, M, E, and S that were used to write the Greek name Ptolemaios. He also noticed that these characters resembled the equivalent ones in the Demotic script, and went on to note as many as 80 similarities between the hieroglyphic and Demotic texts on the stone, an important discovery because the two scripts were previously thought to be entirely different from one another. This led him to deduce correctly that the Demotic script was only partially phonetic, also consisting of ideographic characters imitated from the hieroglyphs. Finally, in 1814, Young first exchanged correspondence about the stone with Jean-François Champollion, a teacher at Grenoble who had produced a scholarly work on ancient Egypt. Champollion, in 1822, saw copies of the brief hieroglyphic and Greek inscriptions on the Philae obelisk, on which William John Banks had tentatively noted the names Ptolemaios and Cleopatra in both languages. From this, Champollion identified the phonetic characters K, L, E, O, P, A, T, R, and A. On the basis of this, and the foreign names on the Rosetta Stone, he quickly constructed an alphabet of phonetic hieroglyphic characters, which appears, printed from his hand-drawn chart, in the famous letter to Bon Joseph Dacier, secretary of the Paris Académie des Inscriptions et Belles Lettres, at the end of 1822, and immediately published by the Académie. This letter marks the real breakthrough to reading Egyptian hieroglyphs, not only for the alphabet chart and the main text, but also for the postscript, in which Champollion notes that similar phonetic characters seem to occur not only in Greek names, but also in native Egyptian names. During 1823, he confirmed this, identifying the names of the pharaohs Ramses and Thutmose. The Rosetta Stone itself currently resides in the British Museum, and in July of 2003, Egypt first requested the return of the stone. Zahi Hawass, the chief of Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities, asked that this piece be repatriated to Egypt as one of several key items belonging to Egypt's cultural heritage. But in December of 2009, Hawass said that he would drop his claim for the return of the Rosetta Stone if the British Museum loaned the stone to Egypt for 3 months for the opening of the Grand Egyptian Museum at Giza in 2013. It is unlikely that the British Museum will hand over the Rosetta Stone permanently to Egypt. In response to repeated Greek requests for repatriation of the Elgin marbles and similar requests to other museums around the world, in 2002, over 30 of the world's leading museums, including the British Museum, the Louvre, and the Metropolitan Museum in New York City, issued a joint statement declaring that, quote, objects acquired in earlier times must be viewed in the light of different sensitivities and values reflective of that earlier era, and that museums serve not just the citizens of one nation, but the people of every nation. And those are the top headlines for Thursday, July 15, 2010. This has been the Audio Wikinews Brief. To receive the latest news, please visit wikinews.org, presenting up-to-date, relevant, newsworthy, and entertaining content without bias. Wikinews is a free service and is funded by your generous donations. Click on the donate link on our homepage to learn how you can contribute. It's written in easy-to-understand English. This recording has been released under the Creative Commons 2.5 license.